Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
You don't.
Hello, this is Nerd Nuptial episode 30.
That's right, 30 episodes. It's hard to believe that we've been doing this 30 times now, not including the first episode that we did on the original Nerd Party. This is the 31st time that we've podcasted together. How does that feel?
It feels like we just started. So.
Well, we want to start by thanking you guys, which is something that we do often. And because you guys have gotten us so close to 100 reviews. We're so close to 100 reviews in the US iTunes store. And here's the thing about the US iTunes store. It bugs me that it's by region. It really does, because we have reviews in the Australian store, the New Zealand store, the Swedish store, the stores in the Middle East. We have reviews all over the world, and I just wish that we could put all of them together, because we would have way more reviews than 96, which is what we're currently at right now. So if you're in the US and you're listening to our show and you like our show,
help us get to 100.
Help us get to 100, please. It just takes a few seconds, especially if you have an iPhone. It's just a few seconds. Go to the podcast app, rate it, and boom, you'll be done.
We're so close.
We're so close to 100. Please, guys, listen to us. Give us a review if you can. We're pleading with you guys. It's our own personal benchmark that we'd like to make. But one person that we'd like to thank on this show who gave us a 5-star review is Glasgow Tory. He took a recommendation from Lee Hutchison, a friend of the show and also a fellow co-host on the Senate floor. And he says that Tristan and Girl are cool and worth a listen.
Well, thank you.
So thank you very much, Glasgow Tory, for taking the time to write us a review, and we really appreciate it because it helps us in the rankings. It helps us get up in the iTunes store, and we get more listeners, we have more fun, and it's just a good time for all. Now, that happened today. What else happened today?
It was someone's birthday today.
Someone very special to us. Someone who has showered us with love for years. And yet he doesn't know
us.
But we admire him, and we love him deeply. And that is director David Fincher.
Yes. And last year, on Fincher's birthday, we were in a grocery store, and we're just getting groceries. And you're, like, looking at your phone, just, like, playing around. And you're like, oh, my gosh, it's David Fincher's birthday. And so we decided to get a cake and take it home and write Happy Birthday, David Fincher, on the cake, which the bakery, decorator, she was, like, very confused why we'd put someone's last name on the cake.
I told her, I said, I was like, I wanted to say Happy Birthday, David Fincher. And she goes, David Fincher. She had no idea who David Fincher was.
No, no clue.
Thankfully. And she's like, are you sure you want me to put this person's full name? And I was like, yes, David Fincher. She's like, you sure you don't want just David on there? Said, no, I want Happy Birthday, David Fincher. Thank you very much.
That's right.
And we posted a picture online, and everyone called us losers. And it's just like, what is wrong
Whatever,
with you?
We got cake, so.
I know. All of our friends were just making fun of us. But we were like, you know what? You know, it's that time of year again.
That's right. It's his birthday. And what better, you know, thing to celebrate today than David Fincher's birthday?
We get cake from it, yeah.
That's right. So we did it again, only this time we didn't have room on the cake because we chose a little baby cake.
We got a really little cake with some decorations on top, so we couldn't write anything on it. So what I did instead was I got the numbers 5 and 4 because David Fincher is turning 54 today.
That's right. So.
And there you go.
Yeah.
And so,
and we brought it over to our family's house, and they were very confused. They were like, "What? Why?"
I think our family's kind of just resigned to the fact that we are nerds.
That's true.
And they're just kind of
they
like,
actually probably handled it better than.
Yeah, they didn't even say, "Oh, that's ridiculous," or "You're weird." They're just kind of like, "Oh, okay." And then we lit the candles, we blew out the candles, and then we all had cake.
That's right. And I think they were thrilled they got cake. Yeah. So, yeah,
they weren't expecting it. So I'm thinking that they're going to look for it next year.
That's right.
But when we were thinking about what we were going to talk about tonight, I was just like, oh, it's David Fincher's birthday. Let's talk about David Fincher. Let's do a retrospective of his movies.
And I reminded you, no, we've already done that.
Like 15 episodes ago, we've already done that.
So, oh well. But we decided that we would pay tribute to another favorite director, Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan. But before we get into that, we want to say thank you to you guys for all of your well wishes on congratulating us about our future baby girl.
Yeah, it's been really nice to see. And just like, it's always been amusing to see some of the different names that people are saying. No pressure.
Yeah, like a lot of you have written it. Like a lot of you have sent us emails and Facebook messages and Twitter messages and everything like that. Congratulating us and saying that we're going to be awesome parents. And we thank you for that.
And we hope you're right.
Yeah, we hope you're right. And they also talked about how our kid has no hope. Like, it's going to be a nerdy kid.
That's
like,
right.
No matter what. Yeah. And I'm hoping.
I hope so, too.
But one thing that people have been doing, and this has happened many times, not once, not twice, not three times, but many times, where people have said, I can't wait to meet Leia Ripley Riddell or Ripley Leia Riddell.
I almost feel like that should be her online name, like how mine's the girl, just because everyone's calling her that.
Which should be Leia Riddell.
Leia Riddell, or it has to be Leia Ripley, though. You have to have the Ripley in there.
That's a long username.
That's true.
One or two people talked about Rey, like we're going to call
her. Oh, Rey.
But the thing is, I am friends with and work with a Rey, so.
Okay, gotcha.
I don't think that would work. I would just think about a big, burly, bearded man, you know? But yes, we wanted to thank you guys because it's meant a lot to us. Your support has meant a lot. And not only saying congratulations, but also our willingness to share our story a little bit. Now, we didn't tell you too many details on the story, but a lot of people were very thankful and to hear that about our trials and tribulations and everything like that. But yes, so thank you again.
Thank you.
So, let's just get right down to it.
All right.
Chris Nolan, he is...
It feels like wrong to talk about Chris Nolan when it's David Fincher's birthday.
Well,
I mean, we love them both.
We love them both, and we talked about Fincher on his birthday. That's and true. We talk about Fincher all the time, so he can stand it.
Okay. I mean,
he's fine.
All right.
He's
all
off doing his thing, I'm sure, right now. But so Christopher Nolan, the one thing that I love about Christopher Nolan is that all of his movies feel like an event.
Yeah, they're all pretty epic.
That's the thing, is that in a time when we get, like, we're every single weekend, there's a dozen movies that come out. Now, it doesn't mean that they're good. You know, it doesn't mean that we're excited about them, and maybe dozen is a little strong. But it feels like a dozen movies every single weekend. That's insane if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
With Christopher Nolan's movies, I mean, they announce them years out.
Mm-hmm.
And like just the way that they cut the trailers, the way that they advertise it, you're just like, oh my God, a Christopher Nolan movie's coming out this year. Or like, you're like this summer, you know, like it's Chris, and it doesn't matter what he's talking about. Like, it doesn't matter what movie he's making. It's just a Christopher Nolan movie's coming out.
It's true. It's true. I feel like the anticipation never really disappoints. Yeah. I feel like he does spend a lot of time on his movies. And it pays off. And they're also usually pretty unique stories,
mm-hmm.
I would say. He doesn't necessarily do stories that are just kind of like run-of-the-mill or, I don't know, remakes or stuff like that you see sometimes other directors.
Well, Insomnia was a remake.
Other than Insomnia, that's true. I forgot about Insomnia. I feel like everyone always forgets about Insomnia, though.
Well, there's good reason to, and we'll get to that. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean... I mean, even his Batman movies were mostly original. I mean, of
right.
course,
they
drew off of the comics, but it's not like it was a remake of 1989.
But it's something that people never saw before.
Right.
That
yes.
type of
yes.
movie.
And it's and then you look at Memento, which was incredibly original. You know, it's just mm-hmm. like, that's the thing is that if you look at all these movies, you know, like Inception, Interstellar, Prestige, Memento. You're like, what's the hook? They all have a hook. They all have something quirky or different. Or it's there's something that's a little off kilter about them.
Mm-hmm.
With the movie coming out, Dunkirk, there's probably not going to be a hook to that movie.
That's true. It seems pretty straightforward.
That's the thing. It's going to be a straightforward war movie.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that it's going to be well done.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It already looks so epic.
And we've only seen like 6 shots.
Exactly.
But already you're freaking excited. It's kind of like when Spielberg did Saving Private Ryan. Like, you knew that it was going to be something special just because it's Spielberg does a war movie.
Exactly.
And so I feel like this is going to be Nolan's Saving Private Ryan.
Ah, yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that just came to me. You know, yeah. I think
that it's going to be.
I think, yeah. And so, you know, like in honor of seeing that amazing announcement trailer,
mm-hmm.
we wanted to talk about Nolan because, like, Nolan is always on the brain. And what do you like about Nolan overall?
I think overall, the fact is kind of like when you were talking, I was thinking, I can always put him on this pedestal and he really never fails me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if one of his movies isn't my favorite, it still has a lot of rewatch value.
It does.
Like, all of his films, I think, except for maybe Insomnia. But I feel like all of them are, like I said, unique. They have a different style. Like, you can definitely feel Nolan's style mm-hmm. throughout all of them. Especially when you get into more of, like, you know, Inception on and, like, those.
Dark Knight on.
You're probably right. Yeah. Dark Knight on, you can feel, like, I don't know, if you were to turn it on, I'd be like, oh, well,
yeah.
That's clearly a Nolan film.
Like, the steel blue.
Mm-hmm.
Like his movies aren't very warm.
No.
But that's not a criticism. But like, it's just like because if you look at, it's so funny, because if you look at the difference between Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, they're very tonally different. I mean, Gotham looks different.
Mm-hmm.
The color scheme is different. The production design is different. The cinematography is different. And it's kind of like with Fincher, you know, like when he moved on from, you know, from Fight Club to Seven to Benjamin Button, Social Network, and everything mm-hmm. like that, and Zodiac, you can see a progression of his style.
Absolutely.
And it's not just like night and day. It's like,
I feel like it goes from gritty to much more refined.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the style. Like, it's still all dark,
mm-hmm.
but yeah.
Underlit in certain places
yeah.
and everything like that.
But I feel like Nolan has his own unique, I would say, like, when Memento feels a little bit different
mm-hmm.
than the newer Nolan.
Yes. Yes.
For sure.
I feel like Dark Knight and Prestige was kind of the testing ground for him to really define his style. And I feel like Inception solidified it.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that. I do.
All right. Well, his first movie is called The Following.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen it. I saw it a long time ago, and I was half watching it. I feel
it's probably before you really got into Nolan.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really get into Nolan, like, as a director
mm-hmm.
until The Dark Knight.
Okay.
To be completely honest with you, like, because I loved his movies, but I didn't really understand. Like, I loved Batman Begins. I loved Memento. I didn't really like Insomnia. But it wasn't until The Dark Knight when I really started thinking, oh, this is all one guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the thing is like, once that happened, once the Dark Knight just completely melted my face off, that's when I went back and was like, oh, okay, I own all these guys' movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love them, and this is fantastic. So I'm going to pay attention to his career.
Right, right. And I remember one time, I think we were dating, and I just randomly said, you know, I think my favorite directors are David Fincher and Christopher Nolan. And then you just immediately started kissing me.
I pulled out a ring. I didn't even buy the ring yet. And I just pulled out a ring, and I said, I was like, okay, this is going on your hand right now. Yeah, I know I did.
Yeah, it's probably your first proposal. You were just like, I need to marry you right now.
I remember you said your two favorite directors.
And it was just really random, too. Yeah. It was just out of the blue. I was just like, you know, I think those are my favorite directors.
I did. You said David Fincher and Christopher Nolan. I didn't even say a word. I completely threw you down and just started kissing you. Because that's the sexiest thing you've ever said.
Nothing past that.
Nothing has stopped it. Yeah,
I never topped it.
Maybe someday soon, but... yeah, yeah, and I completely lost track.
I know. I'm sorry. I know. I distracted you.
I don't even know. I know we were talking about Christopher Nolan.
I know. And then I distracted you with talking about making out with you.
So. Yeah. That's why I'm distracted and a little flustered. It's like you thinking about Jared Leto.
Shut up. What? Oh, will you let that go?
No, I'm not going to let that go.
Oh my gosh.
People emailed me about that.
Oh, are they concerned about our relationship?
No. They said that they were laughing at me because you were
You got so defensive.
Like, yeah, I got defensive and they're just like, yeah, and Tristan just sat there and took it.
That's amazing.
So people noticed.
Okay, well, whatever. I still stand by it.
Right. Christopher Nolan.
I love you.
Yes, I know. I love you too. I love Chris Nolan.
Well, should we talk about Memento since that's the one that both of us really know?
Yeah, let's move
since
on.
I have no reference for The Following, so it's not
so
very much of a conversation.
That we can't really talk about The Following. Yeah. So
we're going to watch it, though. I have not watched it yet, yeah, so
we need
we'll
to go back
it.
And see the genesis of one of our favorite directors. Yeah. So let's just go on to Memento. Do you remember the first time you saw Memento?
It was with you.
Oh, really? Yeah. I showed you Memento.
Yeah, it was.
You know what? I feel like you have seen every single Nolan film.
I have.
Because of me.
Other than Batman Begins, I would say.
I guess that's the only one. Because we saw Dark Knight together, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Yeah.
But not Batman Begins.
Because I remember seeing Inception in the theater with you, Prestige in the theater with you, Interstellar, Dark Knight Rises, Dark Knight.
Yeah. I don't think that Batman Begins, I think that came out just like slightly before us.
Yes. Memento. Which is starring the great Guy Pearce and Carrie Ann Moss. And Guy Pearce is such a chameleon. He is just so fantastic. He can just mold himself into anyone who he wants to be. But Memento is a story told in reverse. And it's not like Tarantino where he kind of like tells it all like mixed up or anything like that. It's the last scene is first, and then the second to last scene is second, and the third to last scene is third, and it's just so it's that was never done before. And like in between each scene you had a framing device of a guy on a phone in a hotel room talking about his story to kind of ground you a little bit,
right, with his tattoos. I think that's the part that always got to me was him writing down all these important details on his body.
And I think it was based off of a short story. I can't remember. It's been a while. But what was when you saw this? What were you thinking?
I just thought it was so interesting how the audience was with him in his confusion. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I could picture my parents watching this and being like, "What is going on?" Because it is so hard to follow. But there's a reason why it's hard to follow, because he is having a hard time figuring out what has happened to him. And why he's in the state that he's in and what has happened each day and everything like that. So I thought that was really cool. I thought that the tattoo thing was unique and fun, where he tattoos the important details each day of what had happened so he could remember. And I also, I guess the moment that scared me was the moment with the wife, how the wife dies.
Oh, when they actually show the wife
dying. It's really tragic.
That was tragic and rough, too.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing to see what this guy goes through. And surprisingly, it has a lot of rewatch value.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it has a huge twist ending that is a big reveal, you still want to go back and watch it again, even though you know what's going to happen.
You do want to analyze it.
Yeah.
Is what you want to do.
This is a great, like, I think that's the thing, is that Nolan's films are great to, they have great rewatch value, and with films like Inception and Memento and The Prestige, you want to go back and like rewatch and think, okay, well, what does he mean by this? Like now that I know the ending, you pick up so much more.
The clues. Yeah. You want to look at the clues and you're like, oh, that makes more sense now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that to some people that would not be interesting because they want to, you know, just have that fed to them right away.
They just want popcorn, yeah.
Right. But it really is interesting. So many of these films, when you go back, you're like, oh, he meant that when he said that, you know? So, Memento. I also wish that we saw more of Guy Pearce.
Right? I feel like he's this guy who pretty
kinda
much...
kind of wasted.
He just picks, I don't know, he just picks smaller projects that he wants to do. I think, I don't know, you don't really see him anything big anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he was in Prometheus.
Oh, completely wasted in Prometheus.
I know, and he had that awesome, like, intro promotional material.
Oh my gosh,
we were
yeah.
so jazzed because we were all about Guy Pearce.
He did a TED Talk, a fake TED Talk. Mm-hmm. I think that was going to take place in the early 21st century, and he gave this speech, which was an epic speech.
Amazing.
Well written. I think it was directed by Ridley Scott's son.
Okay.
And we're like, oh man, if the movie's anything just like this speech, you know, like this is going to be a great movie. Well, we were sorely disappointed in Prometheus, and we didn't see any young Guy Pearce.
No.
You know, like be this epic persona. Like we had him shoehorned into the story where he was old and unnecessarily there. And yeah.
Yeah. But I wish that I saw more of him because I feel like he's so good in this role. And he's just, like you said, a chameleon. So it'd just be, I wish I could see more of him.
Yeah. He has gravitas. He's mm-hmm. charismatic. You want to see him. You want to watch him on screen.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can't even imagine Memento without Guy Pearce.
Yeah. He's such a presence in it.
There's a few movies out there that are like that, where the actor defines the movie. Some mm-hmm. most of the time the movie defines the role, but
this one
is very much role. It's Guy Pearce's movie.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me feels like it's Guy Pearce's movie more than Chris Nolan's movie.
Because it doesn't really feel like the rest of his stuff,
right?
It feels more, I don't know.
Well, at the
you're looking at his acting the most, I would say.
At the beginning, the opening scene, which is technically the end.
Yeah.
and you see the bullet shell roll away, but then you realize that it hops back up into the gun, and the gun hops back up into his hand after he throws it. What Nolan did was he filmed it in reverse with actual film, but with the film going backwards in the camera. And then what they did was they played it forward in the edit bay. And then they affected it a little bit and then reversed it again. And that's how you get this weird but at the same time natural motion. It was very strange.
Weird.
I invite all of you guys to open like to watch the opening scene again and learn a little bit more about that. But it's just like that's the kind of inventive measures that Nolan went through in order to get the look
experimental
and feel.
Type.
Yes,
yeah.
With mm-hmm. Memento. I mean, like, watch the behind-the-scenes stuff of Memento if you have the Blu-ray, the DVD, or there's a special edition DVD out there, too. And there's so much went into the making of this film. This is just one of those small indie genius films
right.
that everyone should watch.
Absolutely.
If you haven't watched it, watch it.
Yes.
All right. Well, we should probably move on because we spent a lot of time on that movie.
That's true. Okay.
Let's move on to Insomnia.
Insomnia.
That's Al Pacino, Robin Williams. It's based off of a Swedish film
mm-hmm.
where a murder happens in a small town, Alaska. Is that right? Alaska?
It feels right.
Yeah. And so it's daytime there all the time.
Right.
Because it's that time of year.
Right.
And so Al Pacino is a detective who accidentally shot his partner. And so now he's off trying to do this this last job and catch Robin Williams, who killed a young girl. And Robin Williams plays a great, like, psycho serial killer.
Yeah,
like,
I think he's underrated in those roles.
I think so, too. Because in One Hour Photo and this one, he's so creepy.
It's true.
He's so perfect.
I think because he does comedy so well, I think that creep factor comes through even more.
Right? I think it works to his advantage.
I think so, absolutely, yeah.
But this movie, the first time I saw this movie, I was in high school. And I was with a group of friends. And I was getting so bored. I was just like, oh my God, like the movie was just so slow. And the pretty girl I was hitting on was getting bored too. And she went out into the stairwell. And so I followed her to the stairwell. I didn't, like you do. I know, right?
You made the right move.
I think so. And so I didn't see the ending of Insomnia for a long time.
That's funny.
And then I, of course, watched it again. And I was like, nope, still boring. And then I was like, okay, well,
we're
Nolan fans. Mm-hmm. We got to watch this together. And you thought it was boring too, right?
Yeah, I had a hard time. Like, I mean, we got through it, obviously. But it just is not very enjoyable, in my opinion.
There were parts that were nice.
Yeah. And exciting, you know. And there's suspense there. But I don't know. I just think that it's lacking that special factor.
I feel like because it was a remake,
it's possible.
Nolan really couldn't make it his own.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe I don't, I'm just making
up excuses.
Because
he's got a great cast there. And they all do really well in their roles.
I didn't really like Hilary Swank, though.
Well, you're just not a fan of
Hilary Swank. I'm not a fan of Hilary Swank. I mean, she has an Oscar. People like her. I'm just not a fan of
Hilary. Yeah. But I don't know. Like you said, I liked Robin Williams' role. I think Al Pacino was Al Pacino.
Al Pacino
awesome.
Can do no wrong.
Exactly.
Except when he's in an Adam Sandler movie. And we won't talk about that.
But. No. but I don't know. This one kind of falls flat for both of us.
Yeah. And so that's why we're not really going to talk about it that much. I mean, it's stylistically, it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's well cut. It's well shot.
It doesn't feel very much like Nolan.
No, it really doesn't. But let's just jump ahead to Batman Begins. I mean, anybody who've listened to this podcast for a while understands that we are huge Batman fans. And I mean, I was a fan of Batman ever since I was a wee lad. You know, like I was dressing up like Batman when I was 5.
Yeah, I loved watching the animated series as a kid. And yeah.
But when Batman Begins came out, that just reinvigorated my love for the franchise. Mm-hmm. And it showed the rest of the world what a superhero film really could be like.
Yeah, and I feel like even ever since, I don't feel like it's quite the way that Nolan's done it. I feel like I know I have said so many times in this podcast how I don't like the cheese factor in superhero films. And I think that Nolan spoiled me for that because I really don't think that I would have enjoyed superhero films without his take on them, because I really like how serious he is about his material, and it doesn't feel like this caped person, you know, with a mask on. It feels like someone real in the city.
Yes.
For defending the city. It just feels more gritty and more real. Mm-hmm. The realism factor for me is what I really enjoy.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, that's what I enjoy too. I mean, because there's, I think it's the connection that he has with his city that really sells it for me. And that's why I thought I was going to like Daredevil, the TV show on Netflix. Because I thought I was going to like that because it has that realism. It's gritty, and it takes the subject seriously, and he has a connection with the city. It's basically Marvel's Batman. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't like the show. And like, people look at me like I'm crazy, and I just don't understand it. But with Batman, it's just Nolan needed to reboot this franchise. Like he needed to start over. I mean, Joel Schumacher almost ran it into the ground. And so like he couldn't do what Burton did and just pick it up, because like, I mean, the first real film, I mean, I understand that there was a there was a movie with Adam West, I understand,
right,
that. But like,
yeah,
the first major motion picture was 1989 Keaton, and so Burton didn't need to do the origin story. I mean, like, he slipped the origin story in there as flashbacks, but then you have the Joel Schumacher films, and you're just like, oh my God. So like, just imagine if Nolan just came out with a Dark Knight, you know, we'd be lost. We would have no connection to this new Gotham.
That's true.
We'd have no connection to this new Batman. It's kind of like what Bond did in Casino Royale with Daniel Craig. Is like, if they just picked up like with a random Bond adventure, we'd be like, okay, well, is this part of the, you know, like Pierce Brosnan continuity? Is this still a part of the old films? And with Batman Begins, Nolan was smart. He's like, no, we got to start at the beginning. We got to show him as a kid. We got to show him as
I thought it was just so unique in the way that he gained his skills, like through the whole, you know, League of Shadows, you know, that whole part of his journey. I think just say it made more so much sense. And again, it kind of based it more in realism, where like, here's how he learned how to do all these things.
And it even talked about theatricality and like
using those smoke bombs.
The smoke bombs and everything like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
And actually, you know, like, I heard some people, I was talking, this was a while ago when I was talking about Batman Online, and we were discussing which ones were our favorites. And I said Batman Begins was my favorite for a long time. And then I was like, oh, I don't know. You know, like,
Dark I think Knight. I convinced you.
You did. You convinced me that the Dark Knight was a better movie. Well, I always knew it was a better movie. But
you were holding on to Batman Begins.
I was. Just Batman Begins was just something special to me. And like one person was just ragging on Batman Begins, calling it a horrible movie. And just like it was, you know, like unbelievable. And he said it's like they handled his training horribly. And I was just I was just like, what are you talking about? He said he's like, well, he goes to Asia and then just all of a sudden he just enrolls in Batman school. And I was like,
what?
Dude, come on. I was like, Batman spent years like in the comic books. He spent years training all over the world outside of America. Right. And what would you rather have? Like, would you rather have like a weird montage of him like in Thailand and then in Beijing and then in, you know, like in Madagascar and everything like that?
Right.
You know, like, would you rather have him have no connection to like it
would... He has to have a connection to Gotham somewhere in that movie. Otherwise, you know,
yeah.
He needs to become Batman.
Right.
Otherwise, it's like that Robin Hood movie with Russell Crowe where
oh
he
God.
Never really became Robin Hood, it felt like.
Oh, my God. It's such a bad movie.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up, but it's true.
I thought it was a nice take. It was a simplified take on Bruce Wayne's quote unquote real journey.
Yeah,
you know, I thought it was a way for us to connect with Liam Neeson and really establish the antagonist
who pops up later
without having him bounce around the entire world and like mm-hmm. learn a new move, and then he goes to Africa and learns another new move.
Well, that would
know?
Be interesting, let's be completely honest.
And so to that fan, if you're listening, you're wrong. We could talk about Batman Begins all day.
We could.
So let's
really
go ahead and
could.
Move on to The Prestige.
Okay, so we saw this together.
Yes, we did.
In a really crappy theater.
Yes! It was so crappy.
Yeah, and...
We could barely understand the audio.
Right, so we had a really... kind of a negative view of this movie when we first saw it because we missed so much.
Right.
And this is one of those movies you have to pay attention to.
Oh my God.
And you have to understand the words.
And you could barely understand Christian Bale to begin with.
Yeah.
Because of his accent.
Right.
And then add some audio issues to that.
We had a hard time. And I think that his accent was not as strong as what the audio being horrible in the theater, you know, made it out to be. But after, when we actually watched it and we were able to actually take it in mm-hmm. and see the movie, I love this movie.
Yes.
This is an amazing film. I think this is the one that I think of the most of rewatch value, of thinking of like all the clues that you watch. I mean, every single time I watch it, I'm like, oh, that means that. You know, mm-hmm. I just think it's so cool. And it just has so many connections to later parts of the movie. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay attention, which we always enjoy, where you have to be actively engaged to enjoy the film.
Yeah.
And it's just such a unique story.
And also you get Christian Bale, Scarlett Johansson, and Hugh Jackman all in one scene together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bowie.
I was mainly talking about the yum factor, but...
Well, that's true, but...
But no,
like... He was awesome in it, too.
But
Tesla.
No, David Bowie...
He's amazing.
...was amazing in this movie. Like, every time I watch it, I'm like, give me more scenes with David Bowie as Tesla.
I know, he was awesome.
Oh, it was so great.
No, but this... I feel like this film... I don't know. I feel like it doesn't get enough love.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. There's a lot of people who don't like it because I don't want to demean those people, but a lot of people didn't like it because they had to think so much, because they had to keep track of what they were watching.
Mm-hmm.
Other people, it just wasn't their cup of tea, and, mm-hmm. and I'm not making fun of those people. But I am so angry at that theater because they robbed
they
us.
They ruined it. Yeah,
they robbed us of that first experience of falling in love with a movie on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I severely doubt that we're going to get that chance again to watch it on the big screen. And it's like, I remember walking away from it where we didn't quite know if there was something wrong with the audio or if it was supposed to be. It was this
or
weird...
Or the audio wasn't mixed well in the film or something like that.
That's what we were thinking. And mm-hmm. so as we were walking, I remember walking to the car where we kind of asked each other, did we like that movie? I feel like we like that movie, but I'm not sure.
Well, and I kind of question it because I feel like this one... is one that I grew to love.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I understand how it doesn't get enough love because people probably haven't given it enough chances
mm-hmm.
where we're big rewatchers. So this is one that I feel like it takes time to really develop a love for,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Which some people would say is not a good quality of a film.
Yeah, but I feel like that's so many of our favorite films.
It's true. It's true. And there's a few movies on this list that we love more and more every time we watch it.
It's very true. It's very true.
But The Prestige has it's cut together great. Mm-hmm. It's acted fantastically.
Oh my gosh. Well, you can't get much better than Hugh Jackman's another one of my loves.
Definitely on your celebrity list, however we want to describe that list.
I was gonna, where are you going with that? Like,
if I weren't married.
That's right.
For some reason, we were in a room together and they were into me list and not married themselves.
Well, he's into theater. I mean,
that's true.
He's very attractive.
Yeah. Well, you sound like you were made for each other.
Really? Really?
No,
Can you go back talking about Jared Leto?
I have a thing for Hugh Jackman, so I can't fault you on that one.
Well, but, there you go.
Okay, so let's move on. Everybody, like, if you want, so if you watch Prestige and you didn't like it, give it another shot.
Seriously.
Sit down. And, like, don't do it on a lazy Sunday afternoon. Like, do it on a day when you're going to be engaged.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead and move on to The Dark Knight.
Such a beautiful film.
I don't know what more to say about this movie.
I feel like we talk about it all the time.
We talk about The Dark Knight all the time. We talk about Christian Bale's Batman, Alfred, and the Joker. And it's just, this is almost a perfect superhero film.
I would agree.
Like, it completely is so close to being a perfect superhero film. There are things that I don't like about it. There are things that I think are like, you could have done that better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like the casting of, what's her name? Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty bad when you want Katie Holmes back.
That is pretty bad when you want Katie Holmes back.
We always joked that in The Dark Knight Rises,
when you see a framed picture of Rachel,
that it would be Katie Holmes because she did a better job.
That would have
and
been,
she didn't do that well.
So. She didn't. That would have been hysterical.
That would have been so funny. It's like, well, replaced.
Such an F you to Maggie Gyllenhaal. But yeah, it's I didn't like the whole cell phone thing at the end. Like with the blue display.
It's a stretch.
Like if they wanted to do like where we can find them through audio from searching cell phones, like that's fine if you want to do that. But the visual reference was a bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Batman physically, like, his helmet showed him the cell phone footage and everything like that, I was just like, okay.
It was weird. It wasn't, I feel like it was kind of bordering on that cartoony plot device.
Right, right.
I also feel like one of the criticisms I have is that they could have introduced Barbara Gordon instead of the sun.
Yes, it would have been just a little bit of fan service right there. And it would have changed. It
and
wouldn't
it
have changed
have been
the
like,
thing.
Oh, that's going to be Oracle.
Yeah, yeah. At the very end, they, we have Two-Face, pointing the gun at Gordon's family, and then he pulls off Gordon's son, and we were both thinking, if he took the girl, it would have been Barbara.
Right.
And that's the future Batgirl. And they didn't even have to develop her into Batgirl. It's not like saying,
no.
We're not saying that we wanted to see Batgirl in Dark Knight Rises.
No, didn't need that.
But it would have been cool fan service. But I guess maybe, I don't know, like holding a little girl by gunpoint is worse than holding a little boy by gunpoint. I don't know.
I'm
trying to think about the censors. I don't know. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying any kind of gun violence towards children is good. I'm just saying maybe that's came.
I don't
that
know. I just feel like there's a missed opportunity there.
I think it was a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Too.
But there's regardless, so much we love about this film.
I mean, that's the thing is that like we're talking about the negatives.
We're talking about so many minuscule things that could have been better.
But that's the only reason why. It's just like those small things.
Mm-hmm.
Could have made it a perfect film.
Mm-hmm.
And this is by far the best superhero film that has ever been made in the history of filmmaking in mankind.
According to the Riddells. Absolutely.
Anyway.
Just, you're going to fight them?
Yeah, I'm going to fight them. I'm going to say, like, you're wrong.
All right.
Like, in a world of opinions, yours is wrong. But yeah, this is everything a superhero film should be.
Mm-hmm. The feel of it, the acting. I feel like they service the character so well. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it is they kept it small. Mm-hmm. You know, we have Batman, Joker, and then eventually Two-Face. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't have to have all these other characters. I'm thinking about Suicide Squad. we focused on these characters and we developed them very well.
And Bruce Wayne was not trying to save the world.
He was not.
He wasn't even trying to save Gotham.
No. It was just trying to stop the chaos.
Yes.
So, again, did I give you chills?
He gave you chills just because you said stop the chaos.
Oh, thank you.
Just made me think about the Joker.
I was
just
going to say, I love that line. I feel like that made such a better movie. I feel mm-hmm. like even compared to The Dark Knight Rises, when we're trying to save Gotham, mm-hmm. this film, because it was more intimate, I feel like it played better in our opinion.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the thing, is like you have Batman Begins where it's him trying to, you know, like basically stop the chaos in the Narrows. Mm-hmm. And then you have Dark Knight where he's trying to stop the chaos overall, mm-hmm. but mainly like with, he's trying to save literally two boatloads of people. Mm-hmm. And then you have The Dark Knight Rises where it's, okay, I'm trying to save the city from a bomb.
Right.
They earned that bomb.
But it took to the third movie mm-hmm. to get there. And right. I still feel like it was a tighter movie.
Yes.
In The Dark Knight.
That's the thing, is that like The Dark Knight is a much bigger film than Suicide Squad, and it's not trying to save the world. Like, people yes. need to understand what bigger means.
Right.
Bigger does not mean the stakes have to be higher.
Right.
And that's Nolan.
It's true. It's yeah. true. It's very true.
All right. Well, this is another movie that we could talk about all day.
I know.
So let's go ahead and move on to Inception, starring the man Bois. Himself.
The Bois. That has been in every trailer ever since.
I know. Gosh. Like, this trailer started a trend that will, like, that has gone, that's happened for 5 years and will go on for another 5 years. It's just bwom, bwom. If you ever hear a bwom in a trailer, it is because of this movie. I doubt they knew what they were doing.
I don't know, but they started something.
But those were some badass trailers.
Yeah. I it was a badass movie.
This is a badass movie. Like you and I, we saw this in the theater together, and then I remember we walked to the car. It was before we had a podcast. we walked to the car, and we sat in the car for a little bit, actually. We didn't even drive away. We sat in the car for a little mm-hmm. bit. I remember this distinct.
I do, too.
Yeah. And we were like, what did you think? And you're like, I don't know. And you said, what do you think? And I was like, I don't know. Like,
we were like trying to process it.
Yeah, we were still processing it because we weren't one of those people who didn't understand the film.
No.
Like, I didn't think it was overly complicated at all.
No, I think it's pretty straightforward. I think the Prestige is more complicated than Inception.
The Prestige is five times more complicated than Inception. I don't understand people. And this is where I'll get kind of plain with people, where I say, I was like, I'm not saying I'm smarter than you because I understood Inception. I'm just saying you're dumb. Like, it is very straightforward.
This is not how you make friends.
I know. This is not how I make friends. But the thing is, you just have to pay attention. Like get off your friggin' phone. Like, maybe stop stuffing your face with popcorn and just watch what's happening in front of you. And then you'll be able to understand going on. But that wasn't the reason why we didn't, like, we weren't sure what we thought. It was just, I don't know what it was, but it was not an immediate love affair.
No, but it wasn't like I knew I liked it. I just, it was almost like trying to figure out how much and wrapping my head around whether I enjoyed the ending or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that, cause that, you know, that ending where you're it's up to interpretation.
Love it.
Right. I love that.
It's so great.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. Now other people would say like, no, you know, and they always try to figure out what does it mean? And, you know, is he still in the dream or whatever. But I think the idea of this is so cool. A dream within a dream. Because mm-hmm. we've all had that idea, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, I'm dreaming, but am I dreaming? Mm-hmm. And then to think about the layers of the dream and, like, designing. Like, that's so our type of thing where, you know, anything creative, we're all about. So this idea of, like, you know, an architect for right. the dream. Like, yeah. That's so cool.
That's badass. That's pretty badass.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that, like, this movie was such a collection of cool moments. And
visually stunning moments.
Visually stunning moments. And that's the thing, is, though, that Nolan understands that you can have cool moments and visually stunning moments, but you need a strong story to back it up with clear motivations. I
yes.
feel like there are some directors that will go unnamed on this podcast who feel like if you just have a collection of cool moments, then you're going to have a cool movie. Doesn't work that
no.
way. Nolan understands that, and that is what his Inception is. Like, mm-hmm. the hallway fight
with, oh my
gosh. With the rotating hallway.
It's amazing.
And he actually built a hallway to rotate
yeah.
so that they could fight.
It's so
not,
cool.
Not green screen, not nothing.
Yeah, and you... It makes a difference.
It makes a difference. It's tactile.
It's a huge difference.
It
exactly.
feels real. And that's one thing that I love about Nolan is his practicality.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like CGI gets a bad rap. I feel like good CGI is good, bad CGI is bad. Mm-hmm. But practical effects he just knows how to do, make it feel tactile and real, and it gives.
And if he can, he's going to try,
right,
to make it, you know, with the practical effects.
And it just really connects you to the film in a very mm-hmm. interesting way, and in a way that I feel is lost. Because there were times when, you know, like, you'd see these huge CGI messes, and people are like, doesn't it blow your mind? I was like, no, because I know it's made in a computer.
Right.
And but the thing is, with Inception, there's so much that is CGI, like with the bending of the of the towns and the streets and the buildings and everything like that, and mm-hmm. like the train coming by and whatnot. There's certain CGI elements to everything, but what he uses with CGI is an interesting concept.
It is.
It's not just a huge giant monster destroying a city. It's an interesting take. Like, it's something that could only be done with CGI.
Right.
And so that's why it's interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. I really enjoy the fact that Maul, his wife, mm-hmm. is the antagonist mm-hmm. throughout. I think that's a really cool.
And she's not real.
And she's just his memories. And I think that's really cool. I also thought it was cool when they're kind of lost in the dream for years. Well, you know, in their dream, and they grow old together. How, like, you know, they built this whole. We always related to this because, you know, they had their childhood homes, mm-hmm. and then they built a house where they always wanted to, like, live at, like, in a penthouse, but they also wanted the beauty of, like, living in a suburb or, like, mm-hmm. a country type feel. And we've always talked about that, how it would be so cool to live in a penthouse, but we wanted, and they could create that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was really cool. And when you really love someone, the idea of, you know, just being lost in them. So
I think that
we would probably be in trouble, actually, if we were in that situation.
I was going to say, I was like, you like that scene is appealing to both you and I probably a bit too much.
It's like true.
The idea that we could live in whatever city or house or mm-hmm. anything that we wanted, create whatever we wanted to create, host what we ever wanted to host, and grow old with each other with just the two of us. It sounds pretty sweet.
I know.
Like not have to worry about we wouldn't have to worry about sleep or food.
Right. Yeah,
that sounds kind pretty of, awesome
kind
right
of
now.
Maybe a scary dream that we have, but we see what could happen, so yeah. We have to, you know, take note of that.
It's a warning.
It's a warning.
You're taking it as a
it's
warning.
It's right, yeah.
But yeah, so like this movie got a lot of flack when it came out because like people thought it was overly complicated and they thought it was overly complicated just for the sake of being complicated. And to those people, I say, all right, so.
Oh, I also love the elevator, like, that takes him to different parts of their relationship.
Oh, of his...
Sorry,
in his brain.
Yeah, you know, like, I think that's really cool.
Like, they go down to the basement, mm-hmm. it's actually the beach.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, I just...
That's all right.
I was getting into it. Okay.
So, Dark Knight Rises, the end of the Dark Knight trilogy.
And the end of Nolan's Batman.
Yes, and we'll never see another Nolan Batman, and... Nolan will never do another superhero film, I'm sure. He produced Man of Steel, but I don't know how much involved he was. So Dark Knight Rises, when I first saw this, I saw this at a midnight showing without
That's right.
you.
That's right.
And I was chagrined that I saw it without you first, but it was a midnight showing for a bachelor party.
That's right.
My buddy Daniel was getting married, and so... We did a lot of cool things, and we ended the night with a midnight showing of The Dark Knight Rises, opening night, downtown Chicago, really nice theater. And the first time I saw it, I did not like it.
I remember you coming home, and you wouldn't tell me how you felt about it, but I could tell.
Yeah, exactly.
I could tell that you were not thrilled.
Like, I didn't want to skew it for you. I didn't want to tell you anything like that. But, like, it was, I don't know, it was kind of a combination of things where... Like, I had a good time at the bachelor party, and then parts I didn't like. There was a few people who were there who I didn't really want to be there. Like, I was the best man. I was hosting a bachelor party. A few people made asses of themselves.
They kind of ruined the night a little bit. Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, nothing horrible. It was just kind of like, oh, come on, man. And
sure.
And so I was kind of going into it with a bad mood anyway. But after I walked out, I was just like, I felt like I watched Godfather Part 3.
Mm.
Where, and don't, like, some people are like, oh my God. I was like, Don't take that
We don't hate it as much as other people.
Yeah, we don't hate Godfather Part 3 as much as other people, where it was kind of like Godfather 1, magnificent movie, mm-hmm. just like Batman Begins. Godfather Part 2, even better than the original, right. just like The Dark Knight. And then you have Godfather Part 3, which I think has a great story, has some great development. It's a great feel. I feel like it's a great addition to the franchise, but at the same time, there's a lot wrong with it. And it has Sofia Coppola. And then Dark Knight Rises, that's kind of how I felt. I was like, this is kind of, I don't know, this is overly complicated. It's kind of hokey. I went into it expecting something else, and mm-hmm. I didn't get what I expected. But after I saw it the first time, every single time I watched it, I started appreciating it more and more.
Yeah. For me, I feel like it's entertaining. Like, it's just an entertaining film. And it's fun to see those characters again. But I feel like it doesn't have the same wow factor as the other two. Like, mm-hmm. I would definitely rank this one as my third favorite.
Yeah.
Just because I don't feel like it took as much time with the characters that I wanted it to. Like, mm-hmm. and I think part of it might be because they added a little bit more characters.
They had a lot of characters.
Didn't they? Yeah.
You had
Bane.
You had Bane. You had Catwoman.
Talia.
You had Talia. You had Daggett that you had to deal with.
Right.
You had, what's his name's character? Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character.
Right. What's his name in there?
I can't remember his name.
Well, eventually they didn't find out. He's Robin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like Morgan Freeman's character had a beefier role. Maybe, yeah,
I don't know about that. Maybe not. I just was kind of wasted. Yeah, a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It's just you had a lot of people they had to mm-hmm. deal with, and it was definitely its biggest situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, one of the Marines said, this situation was unprecedented. You know, like was under the city was under terrorist control and cut off from the rest of the world. And like, we saw the army get involved, we saw the president make a statement. Mm-hmm. That was weird to me,
to have seeing the president. I feel like it kind of took you out. I feel like Batman is in Gotham.
Yes.
And we like to keep him in Gotham.
Yeah. I feel like in
this little microcosm. In Nolan's universe,
yes. Gotham is its own world. Mm-hmm. Nothing exists outside of Gotham.
We don't need to worry about the president.
Yeah. When Bruce travels to the Far East, that's the Far East, right? You know, like, it's not
right.
New York City. It's not Chicago. It's not, mm-hmm. he's not going to Boston for the weekend or anything like that. Gotham is its own world.
Yes, I completely agree.
And it's just, I didn't like that he was out of commission for 8 years and holed up in his mansion. Like,
it felt odd because of where we left off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't know that he was like, okay, I'll be whatever Gotham needs me to be. But it kind of felt like there had been something, obviously, that happened in between where he kind of had given up and stopped. And I feel like a lot of it, the problems, I think, happened with the structure is not quite as tight.
Yeah.
I feel like it kind of drones on for a while there, especially like when the, you know, anarchy happens and, Blackgate opens up.
Bruce is in prison.
Right. Yeah. Bruce is in prison. It feels, I actually love the prison scenes, but at the same time, it does break it apart too much, I think.
Kind of kills the momentum.
Yeah. I also kind of wish that it wasn't Blackgate. I wish it was Arkham. That had I kind of wanted an Arkham bring it in. I know that it doesn't make sense, but.
Yeah, that wouldn't really make sense.
But still, I kind of wanted that. Just add it in there. My favorite part is with all the policemen in the entire city go down to the sewers. Are you kidding me?
When they're like, send every single policeman down there. That'll
every
make sense.
Every single one? Every single one? Really? It's like every time we just roll our eyes, we're like,
oh my god, this is a stretch. This is where you wrote yourself into a corner where you realize once you got there, you're like, oh, well, like if you had the cops, then you could surmount a pretty good resistance force. Well, let's just dispose of the cops in this way.
Exactly.
You know, that's what happened. And you could tell.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of eye rolling moments in mm-hmm. Dark Knight Rises. But like I said, the more I watch it, the more I respect it, the more I realize what it was trying to do.
I think it's fun.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. I feel like it does put the story to bed, mm-hmm. which is good. Because if you're going to end it, then end it.
See, what I thought I was going to see, and this is my own problem. This is my own issue. This is my own fault. Where when I went in, I tried to piece it together. Like when you actually, we saw trailers with Bruce Wayne with a beard and mm-hmm. with a cane and everything like that. I thought that we were going to start the movie with Bane and Bruce fighting.
And then he was the one that broke his back.
Then he broke his back, and then he was out of commission for a year, maybe a couple years, and the city went to crap. Like mm-hmm. Gotham went to crap. It went there was more chaos again. He had to come back as Batman. He had to heal. He had to walk again.
Right.
And then he comes back, and that's when, you know, like he's Batman again. And not self-induced exile. You know, like I don't know. Like that's I think that like because I
you
had
were
that
hoping so much that that was the case. Yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah. Anne Hathaway didn't bother me too much in this movie because she had in the past.
I thought she was unneeded, though.
I know. I feel like there wasn't a lot that, other than maybe killing Bane.
Which was still stupid.
Yeah, it was.
That ruined the moment.
He went out like Boba Fett.
He went out like Boba Fett. They took him out like Boba Fett. You had this badass character, mm-hmm. and I like Bane.
Yeah.
I like him a lot.
Yeah.
I think he's a cool character, and I thought Tom Hardy played him well. But he went out like a punk.
He did.
And then she makes some sort of, like... It's Bruce's epic fight against the man who broke him, mm-hmm. and then she just comes in and goes like, "Yeah, I like guns," and then right. boom, she drives away.
Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway.
Yeah. Also, Talia's death is just like the worst death in the entire world. I think
cinematic death.
I think it's the worst one ever. It really is.
Like
every time I watch it, I try to look to see if it's better, and it's not.
It's not. and I'm so glad that other people agree with us. Like even like the web series, How It Should Have Ended, like when they did The Dark Knight Rises,
right.
they had Gordon go, "Worst death ever." Because
it was.
A talented actress.
She is talented. I mean, look at her in Inception. She's amazing.
She's amazing in Inception, and she's great in this movie, except for that death
scene.
Right. And you're just like, as Christopher Nolan or as the editor, you think you would go, "Okay, Marion, let's try that again, but don't suck."
Yeah, because, that one.
So strange.
It's rough.
Anyway, like I said, I feel like Dark Knight Rises is kind of like a good wine. It gets better with age.
Yeah, I think so too.
Interstellar, last one, most recent one.
That's right. This is one I didn't think I really liked it when I came out of theaters. Did you feel that way?
I was...
It wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago. I didn't have as many mixed emotions as I did with Inception or Prestige, where Inception was just like, did I like this movie? I don't know. Yes, I do. And Prestige was, we didn't like it until we saw it again. Interstellar, it was, well, we liked a lot of parts, and then there was a lot of parts we didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not like the music
at
all.
Which is funny now.
And we just didn't like it in the least. We're like, oh, that was horrible. It was too loud. I couldn't understand what was going on. We didn't think the audio was mixed well. Then when we bought it, because that's what we do, we buy Chris Nolan films whether we like it or not.
We have a problem.
We watch it and we're like, oh, wow, I enjoyed that a whole lot more.
Yeah, I would say that I'm like, hey, do you want to watch this? Probably once every, 3 months I probably ask to watch this.
I know, after we bought it, I think...
We watched it several more times.
We watched it
but
several
I'm saying,
more times.
I have this in my rotation of like, want to watch this.
Oh, that's what you're saying. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we could easily watch this every 3 months. But when we first bought it, we watched it, I think, maybe 3 times in 2 months.
Yeah, we watched it a lot.
And it was just the more we watched it, the more we connected mm-hmm. with the characters, and the more that we appreciated McConaughey's performance and his connection with Murph. And it just has great actors, great story. It was shot so well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with Wally Fizer, Pfister, whatever you want. I can't remember how you pronounce it. Like with him leaving Nolan's troupe after Dark Knight Rises and wanting to become a director. And then he gets Hoytma as a cinematographer. It's, even though it's a different look, it's still a Nolan film.
It is.
Like, it still looks like a Nolan film.
It definitely, and it feels like that. I again, really love the story of how the idea of this time travel between worlds and mm-hmm. how much time, relativity.
Not time travel,
yeah, the relativity
relativistic
fact.
Time.
Yeah, time is just so cool to me. I've always enjoyed that in books that I've read mm-hmm. and in movies.
Like Ender's Game?
Yeah, like Ender's Game and... I just think that's so cool, and to see it in a cinematic way and a Nolan film. I just thought that was so neat.
It was so great to see such a fantastical movie with out there concepts, but still extremely rooted in real science.
Yes, yes. Because I don't feel like you get that very often.
Not very often.
Where they actually try to have something realistic in the sense of the word that here's some real science to back up what we're saying.
Right.
And what we're doing.
Like, is there crazy stuff in there that happens? Absolutely. Yeah. It's a movie. It's not a documentary, but it's rooted in real science.
Yes.
That's the important thing. And I think that's what people overlook when they just want to get nitpicky.
Mm-hmm.
It's rooted in real science.
Yes. And that was refreshing.
It was. It was very refreshing.
And we watched like some behind the scenes about it. How
we watched all the behind the scenes.
We
don't just
we
say
did.
Some.
That's
we watched
true.
All of them.
We definitely did. And it was very fascinating to see how much research had gone into it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I love the story. I love. I wasn't so sure because I know this is like a sin, but I'm not a huge fan of 2001.
Oh, neither am I.
And yeah, we're like very rare people because I know that it's like can do no wrong in the film community.
I will tell whoever listens, like whoever asks me, I will say like, no, I hate 2001. I think it's a piece of junk.
I know, but we're not supposed to say that.
We're not supposed to say that. And I'm sure I'm going to get messages.
Oh, yeah, you are.
I'm going to get people on Twitter. I'm going to get emails.
But you know what? I just don't enjoy it.
Nope.
And I definitely, you know, you feel that when, you know, it's in that four-dimensional what was it like?
I think
is it four dimensional?
Yeah, yeah.
Four dimensional space that you know the humans had made or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely get that kind of feeling of okay, this is kind of feels like 2001, and but I felt like you know at least we had some closure with this one.
Oh yeah, and Kubrick is a I'm sorry, Nolan is a big Kubrick fan.
Yes, so I liked the nod to it without copying it.
Yes,
so. I could appreciate that.
But yeah, we did get some good closure on this.
Yeah.
I didn't... The ending, I would have changed. Where he goes to find...
Would you just leave her?
No, I wouldn't leave her. what's the actress' name? Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway's character.
When he goes to find Anne Hathaway, it almost feels like there's this romance angle to it.
Yeah, and there wasn't any.
There wasn't any romance between the two of them. It was
no,
just,
and I thought that was refreshing.
It was just respect.
Right.
And so maybe it was me projecting my own, not my own feelings, but like my own sense of romanticism onto it because of that's what you would normally see in movies.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like he was going to rescue his love, not go rescue his comrade.
Yeah, I kind of got that a little bit, but I didn't feel like it was confirmed. So that's where I was able to kind of justify that. And like my least favorite part of the whole movie was when she was talking about how love was going to solve the problem of how love conquers all. And you know, is space and time. It conquers space and time and science, basically. I'm like, you're a scientist.
This movie would like, even though this is a great movie, it would be even greater if they took out that friggin' love speech.
That was just such a...
And
downfall.
It's the woman,
exactly.
It's the female scientist making this argument.
That's the thing that really upset me as a woman was really we have to make the woman say this crazy absurd thing that she would not say if she was a scientist in this situation. Like she's what? Why? So that part was my least favorite part of the whole film. Seriously.
Yes,
the whole
here.
Thing.
Same here.
But I didn't necessarily feel like it was confirmed that there was this romanticism. Between the two of them, because there wasn't.
Yeah, no, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was weird. But yeah, Interstellar, I'm kind of scared to watch it.
Because now you have a baby girl coming?
Now I have a baby girl coming. And
I was going to say that.
I'm wondering, like, am I going to get verklempt?
Like, you probably are.
Am I going to get worked up now that I know I'm going to have a baby girl?
You probably are. And if not before, when she comes, I guarantee you will.
Maybe we could make the middle name of this little girl Murph.
No, that's not happening. And don't even put that out there, internet.
Like not even Murphy, just Murph.
That's horrible.
Is there some sort of weird character we could put above the one of the letters that denotes a McConaughey accent? Like
that's hilarious. No.
All right. Well, that is, like, we went on for a long time. Like, it's over an hour.
Oh,
like,
wow.
That we recorded.
Well, it is Nolan.
It is Nolan. Yeah. So Interstellar. So Dunkirk coming up. We got to wait a year.
Think we can talk too much about it because we don't have that much to go on.
No, it's just an announcement trailer.
Right.
That's, like, I saw people complain because that's what they do. That's what the internet does. Complain. They're like, what kind of trailer is that? We don't know anything about it. I was like, it's an announcement trailer.
Right. It's happening.
It's saying you're going to get a Nolan film next year. Be happy. Fantastic. And shut your friggin' face. I keep banging on the table during this podcast.
I was
going to
say, I keep like wondering what's going to happen with the audio. I'm like,
sorry. I'm sorry, listeners, if you can't hear me banging on the table. I get passionate about these things.
That's right. Very passionate.
But yes,
poor table.
Dunkirk, looking forward to it. It could be our first straight Nolan film since Insomnia, which that'll be interesting. I cannot wait to see Nolan's version of a World War II film.
Yeah.
One thing that we want to talk to you about is something that we talk about every single week, and it's the reason is because I love this stuff, lootcrate.com. If you guys, as listeners, because you're special to us and we love you and we think you're sexy, if you go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter in code nerdparty, you'll save some money. It's a great geek box subscription service. If you want to see the kind of stuff that you'll get, go to facebook.com/thenerdparty, and you will find an unboxing video. Once you scroll down a little bit, me and the girl do this for you and showcase some of the stuff, all these great goodies in there. You get about $40 worth of material for $20.
It was a good deal.
Sometimes even less than that, depending on what crate you get.
Yeah.
But if you'll get even more off if you go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter in the code nerdparty, and you'll have a good time. And also, as we asked you at the top of the show, please, if you like the show, even if you like this episode, please take the time, go to iTunes, give us a review. If you give us a 5-star review, we will mention you on the show, just like Glasgow Tori. And it really means a lot to us. We give you guys this free entertainment week to week, and it would be a really special way for you to help us out. So thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to Nolan in the future.
I love you.
I know.